Okay, everyone, today we've got something a little bit different because we wanted to share another amazing podcast with you. We'll think you'll absolutely love it. It's called Go Love Yourselves, and in a few minutes, you'll hear the episode that Ange and I were on.
We loved recording with them, and we chatted about everything from our biggest bust-ups in Flo Rida to accessing healthcare when you live in a bigger body.
It's hosted by Laura Adlington, who you may remember as a finalist from Bake Off and who I'm now calling Freddie after that incredible Freddie Mercury cake, and her best friend Lauren. They're both so lovely and so funny, and the show is all about learning to love the skin you're in and giving less fucks about what people think.
They've done episodes about dating in a bigger body, intuitive movement, self-pleasure, intimacy, wearing bikinis for the first time, and so much more. And they've spoken to guests like Louise Pentland, Stephanie Yeboah, Felicity Hayward, and Dr. Josh Woolrich.
So, if you've loved this episode as much as we do and want to check out some more of their episodes, just search for Go Love Yourself on your favourite podcast app.
This is a Crowd podcast.
Welcome to Go Love Yourself,
the podcast where we're all trying to love ourselves a little bit more.
Do you recall the moment you realised that Flo Rida was Flo Rida because he was from Florida?
What?
Fuck off. No way.
Are you joking?
Tell me, how are you doing and how's little Buddy?
Buddy's good. He loved meeting you. He hasn't stopped going on about it.
I wouldn't either.
It just I'm constantly excellent. Like, when is Smithy coming back? Thank you so much for my duck toy.
Did he like
just obsessed
duck?
With you. He loves his duck. He plays with it all the time. Drives
really?
Me fucking mental. Thanks for that. Sweet. Quack, quack, quack. Thanks, Lauren.
See,
I'm
the friend that gets the animals or the kids, the noisy toys, because I can.
I know you are. I already knew that about you. It's funny because I do the same, actually, to my nieces, and they came round. My sister-in-law bought the noisiest, the most, like, toe-curling, screechy toys you can imagine. She was like, that's payback for the drum kits and the xylophones. I was like, yeah, fair enough.
So obviously our little man Bud has had his jabs now, which means you can take him out for walks and he can go in the outside.
Yeah, he's honestly loving it. Like
he's so bouncy.
You know, like the phrase, he's like a dog with two dicks.
I don't know the phrase.
Really? You've not heard that one. I use it all the time. Like Matt's really happy with someone. I'm like, oh, you're like a dog with two dicks. Anyway, yeah, he's happy as Larry. He's loving walks. When I say walks, we mainly just go on sniffs. He sniffs a little bit. He walks a little bit. He sniffs some more. But no, I'm really enjoying him. I sort of feel like we have like one good day and one bad day, if I'm honest. Like, obviously he's a puppy. He's learning. He's not like being naughty. But like some days he's just hard work because like you're trying to get things done or trying to do a podcast. And he's just like right now chewing something he shouldn't be. So it's just like trying to be like, good boy, but not doing something naughty and like trying to do positive reinforcement. But like on the whole, I'm really enjoying having him. It is a lot harder than I thought it would be, to be honest.
Yeah, I can imagine, mate, but you're doing a great job because he's obviously loving his life. And I mean, do we think we'll ever get him in the water with you on maybe like a little paddleboard situation?
That would be fun. I am going to take him down to the lake actually at some point when he's a bit older. Obviously it's a bit cold as well, maybe. I'm a bit worried. I'm very overprotective. I've learned that about myself. Like earlier on today, me and Matt took him to, like, there's a little puppy pen, like, in a park near us. So it's, like, completely closed off, so it's, like, really safe. And we walk into it, and some woman stopped and was like, can I have a photo with your dog? And I was like, wow, I love that. Like, 2 years ago, I'd have been like, oh, Laura, can I have a selfie with you? And now the dog gets more attention than I do.
I remember walking around Leybourne Lakes with you, like, when Bake Off was on, and people would be like, oh, my God, can I have a phone with you? You're Laura from Bake Off. And now it's all about the dog,
now
babes.
It's all about Buddy. It did make me laugh. Anyway, so she took his lead, and I said to Matt when we left, I thought it was a bit of an odd thing to do. Like, she wanted a photo, like, her friend took a photo of her with the dog. But I was totally fine with it, obviously, like, I'm not like being a bitch. But when we walked off, I said to Matt, I was so ready for like her to like, if she was gonna go off and take him, I was like, I said I don't run for shit. I wouldn't even run for a Chinese. I would run for that dog. Like, I swear to God, like, if anyone came between me and Buddy, I would cut them. Like, the maternal instinct in me is like, if anything happened to him, I wouldn't be able to cope. Ridiculous.
Oh, mate. Oh, he's so looked after. And he's going to be so happy.
So So today we actually have two guests with us for the very first time. They are both hilarious and they've got their own podcast called Finding the Funny, which you definitely need to check out. They've also got a bit of a unique surname that some of you may recognise. So a huge welcome to Ruth and Ange Corden. How are you both doing?
Yeah, we're grand.
So much
yeah.
happier for being here. Like, honestly, I really thank you for having us on. It's so kind of you. You two are great. And
oh, honestly, yeah. the love is mutual. We're just kind of a little loving.
So Ruth, we know you by like 54,000 yes. names. We've got Rudy, we've got Patty, because I know Angie call her Patty, yep. and there's obviously Ruth. Do you prefer anything? Can we call you anything?
Honestly, I will answer to anything. So just call me what you want.
Okay, I might go for Ruth
you
when
have to
you're
call
when you're behaving.
Angie, because she absolutely loves it.
Brilliant. Okay, it's Angie from now on.
Just to be clear, I absolutely hate it. But because I hate it, that's now what I'm
calling you Angie.
Everybody now bloody calls me Angie. Gets right on my tits, that does. Angie. Even my daughter now.
Why do you hate it so much?
Because, you know, I mean, I don't even really like Ange, to be perfectly honest. I don't, you know, I'm Ange, right? But my actual name is Andrea, also shit. And now I've become Angie. Which is actually, I mean, I just don't have a good set of names.
Also shit.
Hang on,
can I just interject it? I will let you speak in a minute, Laura. I know this is your podcast, but
no,
the nickname you've given me is Patty. I mean, that is shit. Yeah. Of that. No. Shit.
Literally shit.
No, but it does.
Why Patty? Please, what have you got to say?
We don't know.
Well, we do actually. I think this really came about because early years ago, that's one of our little things. Chuck that in there. A couple of years ago, we went on holiday to Flowrider, Florida. And
sorry, you went to him.
Flowrider. We had a quick holiday with Flowrider.
With Flowrider.
Sorry, I'm not over it.
She's not over holidaying with Flowrider.
Sorry, carry on.
Do you recall the moment you realised that Flowrider was Flowrider because he was from Florida?
What?
Fuck off.
What? No,
are you joking?
I didn't know that.
That's why he's called Flowrider.
I didn't know it was because he was just from
calling
Florida.
It that. Like, you know how we call like Primark the House of Prime or Primarni? That's what I thought it was just. Oh,
no, he's actually from Flowrider.
That's why he's called Flowrider.
He's a Florida man.
Because he's from Florida.
No. Oh my God.
Right. Wow. Okay. Well, anyway, going back to Patty. So we were on holiday in Flowrider with Flowrider. And Patty was getting a bit burnt, right, on her face.
So she was getting cold sores.
Oh, that's right, cold sores. She was getting cold sores on her lips,
yeah,
right? So she goes, we're at one of the, you know, many parks. She went off, she said, I'm going to try and find a hat so that I can protect my cold sores from the sun. Anyway, she came back with this bucket hat thing on, which was kind of a little bit of an older sort of style of hat as well. Was it like the pattern
yeah, it
or something?
Was really.
It was like quite.
Yeah.
And literally, yeah. I looked at her and I went, you look like you should be called Patty. And then it became the Patty hat.
Patty.
And then in turn Patty became hat. Patty. So that's where it really Patty. Comes from is Patty on holiday looking like she should have been called Patty. In Flowrider.
I don't know how we move on from that, but we must do.
We must. I have a question. I actually have a question. Everyone who comes on the Go Love Yourself podcast, we ask this question and we're putting it to you on the spot. So our motto is the way that you look is the least interesting thing about you. So Ruth and Ange, what is the most interesting thing about you?
Ooh. Okay, I've got mine. I think this is one of the most interesting things about me. My tonsils have grown back.
Yeah. Was not expecting that,
know,
but
right?
Okay.
I'm pretty
are you
boring.
Like a medical marvel? Because what the
Apparently
hell?
Apparently so, according yeah. to my GP.
Wow. Yeah. Well done you and your tonsils.
Have they grown back full size, Pat?
Yeah, pretty much.
She had them removed at about, like, you're about five, weren't you? You were really young. She had to have them removed because they were so big. I mean, literally, we would spend quite often at dinner time giving Patty the Heimlich manoeuvre. But yeah, she used to choke on so much food that they were so big that they had to then remove them, Pats. Or are they
smaller.
Yeah, I mean, they're smaller than... I basically then got... I mean, this is actually a really boring story, and this is the most interesting thing about me. Fuck's sake, I'm screwed. Oh, my gosh. God, I went early doors. I was starting to talk then about a GP appointment I had about, you know, 15 odd years ago, thinking, God, this is really fucking boring. I'm actually screwed.
Why does anyone need to know that?
Yeah.
I'm what? So into this.
What? Why did I choose to tell you that my tons... Oh, God, I'm sorry.
It
guys.
Is interesting. You're a medical marvel.
It's not really interesting, is it?
No, it's that? Not, is it? I reckon that's going to get edited
you got,
out.
You
and
got
it's
anything
gonna,
else?
Somebody's going to say... On the description, it's going to say, we asked Ruth what was interesting about her, but everything was fucking boring. But it was shit.
Yeah. Right, moving on. Ange, please save it. Please save us. What's the most interesting thing about you?
I think the most interesting thing about me is my ability to just make up random words and nicknames. Like
that
very
is true,
quickly
actually.
I will give people a nickname.
Okay.
Very
go
quickly.
On then, do us.
Oh God.
Go on.
The pressure.
Well, you see, for you, Lauren, it would be the classic Loza. But that's
okay,
a bit boring, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's your surname,
but
Lauren?
My surname is Smith, so we'll get
into
it.
And I
we'll
do actually call her Smithy.
I do
and
get
have
Smithy
done
all
for
the time.
Years. I do call her Smithy.
Or Smudger.
I
do get Smudger from some
Smudge?
People. Because apparently
that's nice.
Smudger?
Yeah.
I've
yeah.
never
yeah.
heard you called Smudger.
Yeah, we do Smudge.
I mean, Laura, so you're Laura Adlington. I mean, I would straight away, I'd just be going for Adders.
Snape.
Fuck you, Ruth and Ange Corden.
That's
go on another podcast.
That's what I was going to say.
Surely, no. Laura's nickname would be Freddie.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
I'll take that.
For the
I'll
amazing Freddie Mercury cake she made on Patreon.
I mean, I like to think that I saved the nation during peak pandemic period with my Freddie cake, as did the rest of the bakers with their atrocious cakes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they
like
were all
Peter.
Bad, those ones.
They were pretty horrific.
I did watch you on Bake Off as well. Did something else happen to you during that series?
Oh.
Lots.
There was loads.
How long have we got?
Wait, I want to call you Freddie now, Laura.
Laura is boring, isn't it? Like, if I ever call Matt, he's like, ugh. Who the fuck are you talking to?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah. Because he's always like cunt face or dickhead or bullbag
okay.
or meathead.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
It's like, very sort of endearing, isn't
I've
it?
Actually got a question for Lauren, though. I've got a question for Lauren. Talk to me about this fine blonde-headed PT. What's going down?
Yeah, right, honestly. Basically, it's just the fact that I'm chatting to this dude. I'm single and I'm chatting to this dude.
Yeah.
The worst chat of all time. Like, I can't even tell him how many times I'm fine. All he asks me is, how's your day? How's your day? My day's fine! My day is fine! And I met Laura's dog a couple of days ago. And then I told him about it. And I was like, I've just met my friend's puppy. And his reaction was to go... You've got lovely puppies.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, fucking hell. All right.
The
worstest red of flag. The worstest red chat. Flag. But, and he's fine. He is sexy. And he's blonde and he's muscly. And
but
I mean,
if he's not giving you anything else, I mean, I would, my advice here, Loza, would be, I would say, have a quick shag. Get yeah. that done yeah. and then move on. Because it would appear to me he's not really going to give you much else other than maybe... I mean, the thing is, though, maybe the sex will be shit.
Do you know what I would say? Do you know what I would say, Loza? What he looks like is the least exciting thing about him. Because you base your whole career on podcasts on saying what you look like is the least interesting about you. And yet here you are with this dilemma going, but he's so fit.
But he's so fit.
But he's so boring. Yeah.
But this is it. So I have had a couple of people be like, Lola, you've got such double standards. I was like, yes, no, I know. This is the point. I am a smart, independent woman. Yeah, I turn to mush when they are sexy with sexy muscles.
Right.
So
yeah, but
that's
why,
my dilemma.
That's why I think you just go in, get what you want out of the situation, and then move
literally,
on. I mean,
yeah.
That's what I think you've got to do.
Just be careful.
Be careful.
Hump and
definitely.
Dump, smash and dash, with consent and protection. I will do those things.
Absolutely,
well
yeah.
Done.
I mean, because she is dry as the Sahara down there.
Yes,
I think
it's,
right. it's all closed up.
Yes,
it's,
right.
Yes. So we're going to blow the cobwebs Same. Away, but with a nice, you know, PT.
Same.
I'm totally with you there.
Oh, good. Oh, good. We're all here. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Very, very dry.
We're all married.
Obviously living through you, Loza. So please make it good and tell us all about it. Yeah.
Go and yeah, get please. Your leg over
in
for
fact,
all of us,
in
for fuck's sake.
The pressure. I can't.
maybe sort of let's video call while it's happening.
Oh, okay. Wow.
This is taking quite a turn. I'm not interested in that. Just so that, actually.
Just so that we could feel part of the occasion.
Again, I'm going to say very quickly, thanks, but no thanks, I'm out.
Yeah, I'm out as well. Yeah, but like, you do about, you, Ange.
Okay, like, just you and me then, Loz.
That's fine, babes. I'm in for it. How about like a post-coital voice note just to be like, guys, it was made.
Yeah,
yeah,
great.
And yeah, I'll take a post-coital voice note.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Best sentence of the day.
So you two have obviously like a fucking brilliant relationship, firecrackers. Have you always gone? Have you always been buddies?
Yeah, although I think we should be incredibly clear that when Ange and I fight, oh my God, we fight bad. So we... Oh, yeah, yeah. So we've just been on holiday together and let's say there was a showdown. Oh God, there was a showdown.
Shut up.
So much so that our dad, like mid sort of Ange and us falling out, our dad, Mal, said, okay, that's fine. You two have a chat and sort it all out. All this, I don't want all, and all you coming to me afterwards saying we've all said sorry and all that. Oh yeah, God, finding the fucking funny. Yeah, that's right. And walked off.
Bloody that hell. Right, yeah. It's gotta be bad if your dad's getting involved when you're adults. Like, yeah. Crikey.
What I would say about Ange and I though is that the thing that we do really well, which is why when we do fight, it is explosive, is we know the exact things to say and do to each other up. Like,
in the way that only siblings do. Oh.
You know, Ange and I can be out together and we can look at each other and just cry. Like, we know what the other's thinking. We both just cry. And we walk away. Like, we checked into a hotel the other day and the receptionist was called Angie. And we caught each other's eye, and as we walked off, we both went, did you see it? Yeah, her name was Angie, and we were just cracking up. So, like, there's such a like closeness, and I suppose, you know, there's 7 years between Angie and I, so that like sibling rivalry, our brother is in the middle, so that sibling rivalry didn't really happen for us. You know, when I was 7, Angie was 14, we were doing very different things, you know.
Yeah, because I think, because me and my brother are like, there's only like 18 months to 2 years between us, yeah. And so growing up, I always called him Golden Boy growing up because he could do no wrong.
Right.
And like, he was always really like into sports and like really fit and healthy. And I just basically ate a lot. And so like, I think that our hobbies were very different. And so, yeah, he was like really popular and always had girlfriends. And I was just like the reject that no one wanted to kiss at the school disco.
Oh, so
he didn't really get on.
Disco.
No.
Same.
I remember, I think it was, I don't know if it was my first or second school disco, right? And I went to town back in the day where I could actually buy clothes on the high street. Yeah. I was only about 12, to be fair. And I remember buying from New Look in Gravesend a like mermaid blue boob tube like dress with a massive split. And I had a belly at age 11, 12. And I remember before the school disco, my brother said to me, I spoke to my mates, right? And they basically said, doesn't matter what you look like, that one of them will get off of you. And I was like, okay, brilliant.
Cool.
Brilliant. Okay, cool.
Great.
And then honestly, like, this is going to crush you. It crushed me. So we went to the disco and then my brother came back to me and was like, yeah, all of them saw you. And they were like, nah.
No.
Oh, fucking boys. Oh, boys are the worst.
Talk about a cool memory. Cheers, brother.
Cheers, bro.
Yes. Anyway, so we're closer now that he's had kids. Like, I'm making him out like he's a dick. He's not a dick at all. He's lovely. I love my brother. But obviously when you're kids and you're
kids, everyone's a dick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Everyone's a dick. Yeah. But yeah. I wish I had a sister. Sorry, Ricky. I love you.
That's fine. We'll take you as our sister.
Yeah.
Oh, fine.
Laura, Lauren, Lotha.
Snake.
Laura, Snake.
Slytherin.
Python.
Yes. Slytherin. Anyway.
Wait, are we calling Laura Slytherin? I'm so into this. Wait, Laura, do you like Harry Potter?
No.
I don't like Harry Potter either, Laura.
What?
Me and Lauren also debate about Friends because I think Friends is shit and she thinks it's the best TV show ever.
So do
Ange.
Oh my
God.
Ange.
Right, me and you need to go for drinks.
That's it then. I'm stealing Ruth because I'm assuming you like Friends, babes. And we're,
I love Friends. Lauren, we can go for a drink. We'll go for a drink.
Thanks.
In fact,
yes.
Should we start a podcast, Lauren?
Yes, we should. Fuck you, Laura, I'm off. See you later.
I think we should petition to be the least women panelists.
Oh,
so I think we need a shake up.
Yes, we would absolutely kill the least women panel.
We would kill it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't we? I mean, physically, we could crush them just by sitting on them.
Yes, we could. That's fine.
That's fine.
No, we,
it
that
would be entertaining
brilliant.
Yeah. TV.
Oh, my God, I'm so excited for this. But this is all of our listeners. Email ITV. Sort us out with, with our new jobs.
So going back to podcasts, so you guys actually set out finding the funny during lockdown, is that right?
Yeah, we did. We live about an hour away from each other, so it wasn't like we could kind of go and, you know, sit around each other's garden. So we ended up FaceTiming so much. And we'd be FaceTiming for like ages. We'd be having like these random conversations, absolutely cracking each other up. I mean, no one else in our households would be laughing, but we would be. And then we were like, we were finding it extremely entertaining. And that was really why we sort of came up with this. Do you know what? We are finding this funny. The stuff we talk about, we find funny. And actually, would other people? And I think at that point in life, for so many people, it was trying to find those little bits of joy, those little bits of laughter that were distracting from everything else that was going on. And that was really the reason we started. And I think if lockdown hadn't have happened, I don't think we'd have ever done it. And I hear so many people saying started a project in lockdown, or they did something in lockdown that they would never have done had it not been for that point in everyone's lives where the world stopped to a certain extent. I love the fact that we don't shy away from like those kind of more serious things. We do kind of touch on things that we've either both experienced or we know of other people that have been through things, and we're very kind of open to really sort of talking about things that sometimes people don't really want to talk about or shy away from. And I think we're very happy to do that as well. So yeah, I just think we've loved doing it, and we'll just continue going.
It's time for a quick ad break to tell you about Skin & Me. If you're struggling to get started in the skincare world, then Skin & Me could be really good for you because they offer powerful, personalised skincare that really works. All you have to do is take an online consultation and share some selfies, and they'll sort out the rest.
So I've been using Skin & Me for probably about 7 months now, and I absolutely bloody love it. Like, I really do use it every single day. And I love the convenience of it because it comes every month in the post. I haven't got to worry about putting like 10 products on my face. It's literally just one thing. It's called like a daily doser. You twist it, and when it clicks, you know you've got the exact amount. Because I never know as well whether to use, like, people always use, say, like, pea-sized amounts, but I'm like, I have a very large face, so I don't know, like, do I use two peas? But yeah, I love the convenience of it, and I think it genuinely works. Like, I've really noticed a big difference in my complexion. I can't recommend it enough.
So if you'd like to try Skin & Me, we've got a really good deal for you. You can actually get your first month for just a £3.50 pharmacy fee with code LOVE8, that's LOVE and the number 8, and you'll get your first month for £3.50 when it usually costs £24.99.
So I know that you shouldn't like yuck somebody else's yum, as in like kind of insult something because someone else might love it, and you should just be a really nice person, but there are a lot of how do you say it nicely, wankers that do podcasts, and then a lot of them have penises. Just a nice coincidence.
It's not a coincidence.
I think that's the thing that everyone loves about you two, is because you're so real and relatable. And I think, I don't know, maybe if like just because the pandemic or not, I just think that that's what we want and need right now. And like you say, I love that you aren't afraid to talk about the kind of the shit stuff as well. Like Ruth, I know that you've like kind of similar spirit experience from me, like in that like years of like infertility and trying for a baby and stuff like that, and like no one really talks about it, I feel like, because I don't know about you, but I certainly felt like a shame about it, like I can't lose weight, and I just felt like it was all my fault. And I just felt like people looking at me like, well, you obviously don't want it enough if you can't lose the weight for IVF and stuff like that. And it was like without a doubt the hardest thing I've ever been through. But yeah, tell us a bit, if you're comfortable, like tell us a bit about your sort of story with that.
Yeah, and I think there's a bigger community now of people who talk about struggling to conceive, but they end up with the baby at the end. And that is not to like poo-poo that amazing thing that has happened. Like, that is incredible. That's amazing. But what lots of people don't talk about is the story that doesn't end in the packaged baby. And the life that you have to create for yourself when you're childless at a certain age that you didn't ever think you would be. And I think that was the thing for me, that I searched online when Matthew and I, that's my husband, we've been trying to have a baby. I mean, I would say we've probably stopped now, but when do you ever really stop? Like, you know, if we were to get pregnant at any point, we would be over the moon. Like, we did go through a stage where we absolutely stopped trying, and like, I think I had to for my own like mental health. But I searched for a story online that was mine, and I couldn't find it anywhere. I couldn't find that story of like somebody in a
bigger body, who was fat, who was struggling to conceive, who had been shamed by the NHS actually because of their size, which, you know, fat phobia is massive in the NHS, in my humble opinion. And I was just like, okay, I'm gobby enough and mouthy enough to share some of this story. And I think the place that I'm in now is I've actually started to talk about being child free rather than child less. And that might sound like a really tiny change, but it was massive for me because my pain of not being a mum will never go away. But there's a freedom in living the life that I live now. And I never thought that would come. And I think switching to talking about being child free was a really important change in dynamic for me. And I think, you know, Matthew and I, like, we try and find the joy in living without children, whether that's we get to have a Sunday morning lay-in, we get to spend our money on what we want to, we don't have to worry about winter coats and school shoes and, you know, budgeting for babies and all that kind of stuff. But for me, it was like, people talk about their story of going through IVF and getting the baby or struggling to conceive and then falling pregnant. What isn't really talked about is not ending in a baby. And there's so many women and men and couples out there where that isn't the reality. It's been a very difficult slog, but yeah, I think I'm creating a life for myself now that isn't without difficult days, but is much better than it was before.
Yeah, I think that's the same. I do think, I remember before, like, the Bake Off, I remember thinking, like, I don't really want to be here anymore. Because if I was thinking, like, if I can't be a mum, then what am I supposed to do? Like, I was born to be a mum, like, and I find it, like, and I used to find it irritating when people said that, but I genuinely did think that. And it's very hard when people, like, people always say to me, like, oh, you're so maternal, like, you're meant to be a mum, and then you just sort of like, yeah, kind of didn't happen for us. But yeah, it was a similar experience for us. We just literally turned down at every hurdle. So went, you know, waited for 9 months, I think, to get an appointment, and then they basically weighed us before we went to see the consultant, and then they were like, we can't do anything for you. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I waited 9 months for this. So I made them do tests, but they were like, okay, but just so you know, we'll do the test this time as a one-off, but if anything comes back, then we can't do anything for you.
Yeah. I also think the thing is, for me, right, like, allegedly, from everywhere you read in the NHS, we're in this, like, obesity crisis. Like, everybody's obese, yeah? But fat people can't have babies, but yet we're still populating the earth. It's like, you can't have it always. You can't say there's this massive crisis around people's weight. Oh, but if you're fat, we won't let you get pregnant because it's really risky. Well, loads of women up and down the country every single day fall pregnant who are fat. Now, yes, I'm absolutely not saying that health isn't important, but since when does a number that is calculated via your height determine your health? Like, health and fat are different things. Like, you know, and it's like this instant assumption that I must be lazy, I must not want to look after my health, I must not want to do anything because I happen to be in a bigger body. And you walk into consultants' rooms. I remember when we went for our NHS appointment, we sat down and we had, like, a conversation with the consultant. He started off quite kind, actually. I thought, oh, he's all right. And then he wrote down what all the options were, and I said, oh, so, you know, there's different options, and then at what point would you try IVF? And he just, like, put a line, he put, like, a cross, massive cross with the IVF. He went, oh no, you're too fat and too old to have IVF.
Bedside manner on it, Jesus Christ.
And then he carries on, and then he turns to Matthew, this is absolutely no joke, and says, well, you're not the problem, you've got super sperm.
Oh my fucking God.
But yeah, and I cried in that, and then he said, I need to weigh you, and I said, but you've told me I'm too fat, why do you need to weigh me? You've already told me, mate. I was absolutely bawling my eyes out. He was like, I have to. And then he said, I think you should get a gastric band, I think that'll be the only way that you become a mum.
Who the fuck is this guy?
Oh, honestly, he was an arsehole. This nurse took me out the room to weigh me, and I was really crying, and she was lovely, and she went back in and she said, I'm not prepared to weigh her based on her emotional presentation, it's not fair. And she didn't. And ever since then, and this is what people don't know, you know, you can put on your records with your GP, I don't want to be weighed. I went to my GP and I said, I never want you to weigh me again. Like, if you want to talk to me about my health, ask me what I eat, what I do, how I keep active, do that. Don't put me on some scales and do a calculation and tell me that my height divided by something else means I'm unfit or unhealthy. Like, you know, you want to hear something really funny about something very different when I went to the NHS about gallstones? Gallstones.
Yeah, of course we do.
And she, the consultant, I'm not even joking, this is what the consultant said to me. It's probably related to your weight. Of course it fucking is. Everything is. I stubbed my toe.
It is, yeah.
I stubbed my toe. It's related to my weight. I've got a sore throat. It's because you're fat. Like, anyway, she was talking to me. She said, you know, we're not going to operate because going under anaesthetic, even for keyhole, is too risky with your BMI. Then, in the next breath, there was a beat. She said, have you considered a gastric band?
Oh, for fuck's sake, mate.
How are you going to do that?
Keyhole surgery.
When I'm awake, what are you going to do? Hang on a second. Hang on.
Oh,
are you
going
to give me a sleeve while I'm sat there, fully awake? No. And I said, and she pushed the leaflet across the desk, and I pushed it back to her, and I said, do you understand what you've just said? She looked at me. I said, I'm too fat to have my gallstone removed, but because I don't tick the health box on your criteria, and the NHS is all about getting fat people to be thin. It's the pursuit of thinness, not the pursuit of health.
Not health.
There's your leaflet back. I can't have that, can I? Because I'm too fat. Because it's too dangerous. So forget it. Thanks for your time. She just stared at me. She just literally, and I think she thought, oh shit, it's a fat person with a voice who isn't going to let me bully her.
Like, yeah, because you can't be anything but fat and jolly, obviously.
Yeah, you've got to be all like, way!
Bubbly, always bubbly.
Yeah, you've got to be bubbly.
Yeah.
But that's actually what she said to me.
That word.
And it's like, that sums up that it is the pursuit of thinness. It's about people being thin. It's not about people being healthy. That is the thing. I think from the messages that I get from, I mean, my experience with that consultant is also like yours, Laura, a good number of years old. But the messages that I get from women on Instagram, like I had this same with my consultant. I've been told if I lose, you know, look, I got diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome. I lost 5 stone and my PCOS got worse. Like,
really?
Yeah. Because polycystic ovarian syndrome is so complicated. It's about insulin levels, it's about hormones, it's about, you know, if you deprive your body, and I lost 5 stone very quickly. Like, you know, I also have endometriosis, and it's like, okay, well, you can't tell me that's because I'm fat, because that's literally about my womb coming away from itself. Mm. Like, come on, hang on a second. But I think, you know, there are a couple of clinics now in the UK. IVI UK will work with women with a higher BMI. So they are one of the leading people in the UK. Obviously, that's private, but they are one of the leading clinics. But there are also lots of private clinics, even if you're paying for treatment, that will discount you based on your BMI. Like, even if people rock up with all the money in the world, it's like, well, no, we're not going to do it. The other thing to say is that if you go into Europe, it's very different. So IVF in Europe is much cheaper for a start, but also okay. Their regulations and rules around BMI are completely different. So places like Spain and Prague and Greece, who have very, very, very high success rates of successful IVF, they actually do it completely different to the way we do it over here, to get very technical. But Europe is very different. Their guidelines are very different. And lots of people who are bigger go into Europe and have success at getting pregnant.
Yeah, I have heard of that. There's a great woman on Instagram, by the way, if anyone wants to give her a follow, called @YourIVFAbroad.
Yeah, she's brilliant.
She offers advice about that. It is something that I started to look into, and then I was a bit like, oh, I don't know if I can put myself through IVF. But yeah, you saying about the private clinics, I remember having, I think, chat with a couple of them, which, by the way, you have to pay for, like £200 just to have a chat. All right, great. Yeah. I'm in the wrong job. she says, I'm doing a podcast. no money in podcasts, though, to be fair.
No money in podcasts.
Yeah, and even they were saying to me that, like, so I think the NHS threshold for IVF used to be 35, and then because of budget cuts, they reduce it to 30. And then privately, they kind of, I think it, some of it is case by case, but basically they want it to be between 35 and a maximum of 40, which, you know, like, sounds high, but it's really not. Also, like you said, like, Ruth, like, some people are just bigger. Like, I genuinely think, like, I've been fat since I was 8 years old. Like, tried every single diet you can possibly imagine. I have lost a bit of weight sometimes. I put it all back on. I think I'm just meant to be bigger. I'm not saying that I couldn't be healthier, but I also, like, I go open water swimming. I love vegetables. I love salad. I eat too much chocolate. I definitely do. And I definitely could move a bit more. But I don't consider myself that unhealthy. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I feel like they always really push for the, like, the surgery route as well. Like, I was going to have a bypass or a sleeve. I actually hadn't made my mind up. the one thing they were nice about is that they were like, you know, you can't do this on your own. Like, you're not going to lose 14 stone overnight. So they pushed me and pushed me to go down the surgery route. But I realized that it doesn't fix like my head. Like, it doesn't fix like, as in like why I want to overeat and the yeah. emotional reasons why I overeat and I binge eat. But yeah, I just don't, I don't know. Like, I take my hat off to people that have had the surgery, because some people say, oh, it's the easy option. I really don't think that. I think it's a huge decision, like life-changing decision. But I also do know a lot of people that have done it and are yeah. really like happy with it. And honestly, I know a lot of people that have done it and are very poorly and also have put weight back on, and it's not been good for them.
It's already a very emotive time. And I think that's what brings the shame. It's like, it's my body. Yes. It's my fault. You then start to get an even bigger hatred for your body. All your life you've been told that you don't quite fit the aesthetic of society, so you already feel shame about that. And then you get into this thing where, and I'm like looking at Matthew thinking, God, probably if you'd have married somebody else, you might be a dad by now. So then that becomes more shame inducing. I start to hate my body even more. I start to not be kind to myself even more. And I actually don't often think consultants know, and GPs, the damage that they do to people when they say stuff like that. And somebody who is my size, who is made to feel that emotional in a consultation, is likely to go home and eat.
Yes.
It's not rocket science, yeah, guys. Yeah. Like,
so true. You know. I did that exact same thing. I went and binged, and I do that when I go to the shopping centre and I can't find clothes. But I did that when I was younger. I remember, honestly, so clearly, every Saturday I would go shopping for clothes, couldn't find any, so I'd spend all my pocket money on sweets, crisps, like shit food, and go and binge and eat that. And so the sort of cycle as such like continued.
So in that chat, you sort of, you know, alluded to like your relationship with your body and trying to sort of come to terms with that as well. And I just sort of wondering, like your relationship, like both of you, your relationships with body confidence and or body neutrality, you know, living in bigger bodies and living in a very fat phobic world, like what your relationships are with your bodies, because you both seem incredibly confident, probably in the way that Laura and I are. And then we both have our demons in our heads as well. So I just wondered if you could tell us some more.
I think I've always had I've always felt like I should always be slimmer. And I think, you know, probably all kind of felt that, you know. But I think probably for me, I would say probably turning 40, it was a bit of a shift for me. It was a bit of a turning point where I kind of went, do you know what? I don't need to try and be anything else for anyone else. Like, I just need to make sure I'm looking after me. I'm looking after my body in a healthy way. I have definitely found my confidence in myself, my body, my head very much has come hugely with age. And I also think for me, I'm so very aware of the fact that I have a daughter. She's a good reminder to me about how I talk about myself, about what I say about what I look like when I put clothes on, if it doesn't fit me or I don't like it, or I'm really aware of the things I say that I talk about for myself, but then the impact that then has on her and what she's hearing. Confidence has only come with age. That has definitely been my thing.
Amen, sister. Mine is so much shorter than that. Mine is like, all my life I've had disordered eating. There's no doubt about it. And that there's a stat, isn't there, that is like only 6% of people with eating disorders are underweight. Like, you know, the fact that nobody would ever think that my eating is disordered because I'm fat, it is ridiculous. If you suffer with anorexia and bulimia, they are incredibly complex mental health conditions. But if I went into my GP and I was 4 stone, they'd say I had a mental health condition. I go in and I'm like that, and I'm lazy, and I just always make the wrong choices. You know, nobody correlates that like mental health around food when you're fat. And I've sort of got to the stage where I don't dislike myself. I just sort of feel neutral about my body, I suppose, is what I've got to. I don't love myself. I don't look in the mirror all the time and I'm like, I'm full of confidence. I don't hate my body. I can only do really what's right for me. And if I'm thinking about my relationship with food, that's my biggest thing. Why am I eating this? Like, why am I putting this into my body? Is this because if I was a drug user, I'd be going to drugs or alcohol now? If I was a smoker, I'd be smoking a cigarette. Like, is this about some form of addiction that is making me put this in my body, or is it because I want it?
Mate, you have just blown my mind, because I do that. My thing as well is, you know, I would eat when I'm feeling sad, happy, excited, horny, whatever I'm eating. But like, why? And you're right, like, if I had another addiction, would I be going to that in that moment? Or is it because I'm actually hungry and I want something to eat? Oh my God!
And that is why I think intuitive eating is so good. That whole thing around intuitive eating.
Yes.
It, like, why am I picking this? Like, am I going to McDonald's because I've just had a really shit day? And if I was a big drinker, I'd be going home and downing a bottle of wine. Am I going to McDonald's for that? Or am I going because actually I fancy a burger? Now, if it's because I fancy a burger and I do it in moderation, go for it. But it's the why for me. That's the relationship that I'm starting to have with my body and with food. Why am I eating this? Why do I want it? Because I just don't think my relationship with my body or my body confidence is anything to do with my food choices anymore. It's all emotion for me. It's all around how I feel emotionally, what I've gone through, the day I've had, you know, how tired I am, how bothered I can be. It's all around that. And that is so complex. And that's what lots of people don't understand.
That's it. I think exactly that. Like, it's so nuanced. The reasons why people are, I don't like the term overweight, because like, over what? Like, anyway. And also, like, even things like hormones and like chemical, like, I don't know enough about it. But like I said, I think some people are just predispositioned to be bigger. And then I think there are other things at play. What isn't available on the NHS or anywhere, as far as I can sort of tell, is the emotional support of, like you say, the why. So, and I honestly feel like, and again, I wouldn't want to do it as like a business idea to make money off of, right? But how about this? How about instead of like Slimming World and Weight Watchers, again, I'm not knocking anyone that doesn't, right? I'm not anti-dieter. I am anti-diet. That's just me personally, right? But what about instead of like kind of having food as sins and everyone going around the week going, have you been good or bad this week, Sharon? Why don't we have something where people can actually talk about like their emotions and what feelings come with overeating, how we feel afterwards, and then look at the why? I feel like that is where the NHS need to fund it, not obesity causes cancer, you're all basically fat and lazy, do something about it. Oh, and by the way, we're going to give you inferior treatment until you do.
Let's start it and call it We Are The Real Loose Women.
Yay! I want to do it like you know, like on Little Britain when it's like proper, like just call it Fat Club. Like,
oh,
just
call
it what it is.
Always.
Just call it what it is.
Yeah. I remember, it's always like, isn't it? You know, they try to do the emotional stuff at those things. And, you know, I understand that I'm really starting to slag them off now, but oh well.
Mate, we did a whole episode on it. It's all good.
They try to do the emotional stuff at those things, don't I? And it's always like, the leader at the front, who fucking hell. I went to Slimming World once and the woman had lost 2 stone. I was like, what? 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 You only needed to lose 2 stone. Literally, fuck off. And you're going to stand at the front and talk to me about how to lose weight. And you've gone from like a dress size 16 to a dress size 12. What? Anyway, she would do the whole like, I understand that. Firstly, no, you don't, Janet, with all due respect. You don't understand that. Secondly, but I think what you've got to think about, Lisa, is that if you hadn't have broken your nail, you wouldn't have had the fry up. So put a bit of extra strength nail polish on your nails and next week you won't have the fry up. Anyway, who's next? It's like, oh my gosh.
It's awful, isn't it?
Oh, man, like, we've all got so many stories from the Fat Club days, I tell you, honestly.
I find a lot of it just really patronising, like you said, exactly, like why have you had a bird a week? Oh, well, basically, like, I don't know, like, my husband had an affair or, like, my nan died, and they're like, oh.
Well, how much do you want to lose next week, then? Oh,
next,
well.
Yeah, how much do you want to lose next week? Time for the raffle. Who wants some mouldy fruit?
Your nan died, raffle. Sophie. Your nan died. Well, you should have just picked a banana.
Can I ask you a question? And obviously you can tell me to like fuck off. But like, does it get really boring? Like when people just are like, tell me about James. And then like want stuff from you.
Do you know what? In all honesty, right, look, I'll say this straight up. And I reckon Andrew will probably agree with this, right? I am acutely aware that what James does for a living is fascinating. I am so proud that so many people love Gavin and Stacey. Like straight up, I'm so proud that my brother has the like comedic intelligence to sit down with Ruth Jones and create something that even if he wasn't my brother, I know Ange and I would both absolutely love. So I don't think it gets boring. I think, you know, we are immensely proud of everything that James has achieved.
I think what tends to happen is that what Angela and I have become very, very, very smart at is those people who only want to talk about James, and those people who are like, oh, that's an interesting thing that your brother does. If I met David Beckham's sister, or, you know, I'd be like, oh, right, cool, that's cool. Tell me about, like, when he first signed for Man United. Like, that's amazing. Like, what was his relationship with Fergie like? Like, there are things that would be fascinating by it. And I think all that happens is you become very quickly gauge, oh, you are only interested in knowing about my brother. I'm not down for this. Rather than, I really like you, I think you're cool. Oh, isn't it fascinating that your brother happens to be on TV? And for me, I'm so proud of, like, everything he's achieved. Like, Gavin and Stacey is a wonderful TV show. What a thing to have come out of, like, somebody that's part of our family. That's amazing. Like, that is amazing. And, you know, we're really fortunate that we've got to do some brilliant things as a result of what James does and who he is. Like, you know, we flew on a private jet and I asked for boiled eggs. And what?
As you do.
Wait, that should have been the most interesting thing about you, young lady, not your bloody tonsils.
Yeah, that should have.
You should have. You really missed an opportunity there.
Yeah, we got this email before we flew, and they were like, you can have anything you want. Like, Ange was like, smoked salmon, crudités, you know.
Absolutely.
Can we have some champagne? I said I'd really like some hard-boiled eggs.
Why?
I don't understand.
Tell you what is shit. When you give out your Christmas presents on Christmas Day and James Corden's your brother, that is shit. Honestly. One year, we go round giving out all our presents. Yeah, I'd bought Dad this really nice, like, jumper. I'd spent, like, you know, 75, 80 quid or whatever. Dad's like, oh, yeah, I really like it. James, here is a debit card with X amount of thousands of pounds on it for you to go travelling around the world. And you just go...
Yeah. Thanks, mate.
Fuck you.
Oh, can't you, like, combine presents? Like, yeah, we're going in together. Yeah, that's from all of us.
James is like, no, I want to give Mum and Dad.
Speaking of your dad, though, I was on TikTok the other day, and I've got to say this. A random TikTok appeared on my For You page of your dad playing saxophone on stage with Michael Bublé.
Yeah.
And I thought... All right.
He has a great relationship with Michael Bublé, doesn't he, Ange? It's quite sweet, actually, the relationship they have.
What the fuck? Hold on a minute.
It's so random.
Honestly.
Last question for you both. What would your advice be to anyone listening about how to sort of find the funny or finding light in the darkness?
So I think mine is, like, even when things feel shit or are shit, or I've had a really bad day, week, month, whatever, I'm a real... believer in just looking for those kind of blessings that I do have in my life, even if everything else feels absolutely awful.
Mine would be comparison is the thief of joy. So, like, the whole time that I'm stood looking over my neighbour's fence at their grass going, oh God, I want to be over there, I miss the joy that I've got in my own life. And that isn't like in a toxic positivity, everything happens for a reason, like, just find the joy. It's like in the really, really deep, painful, dark times of my life, I've wanted to live somebody else's, but actually you get there and it's just grass and you're like, actually this is no different. You've got the same problems, you've got the same difficulties, you have to deal with the same stuff annoys you, and the joy that it steals when you compare what you've got with somebody else is just monumental. Whether that's dress size, they've got a baby I haven't, size of their house, car they drive, friends they've got, it is the thief of joy. And I think the extension of that is, for me, true joy has come out of, like, true lament. And I think, you know, sitting with my pain and going, I'm never going to have a baby. God, that's really desperately painful. I'm not going to sweep that under the carpet and go on to, but isn't it amazing that I've got great nieces and nephews? I'm going to actually sit with, I'm never going to have a baby, probably. Like, I'm never going to be called mum. That's a really deeply dark, painful thing. My joy for the life that I have now has been born out of being kind to myself, getting to know myself, understanding me, and managing that grief in the best way that I can while I don't compare my life to somebody else's. That would be mine.
Oh, honestly, you two are brilliant. Like, can we please all be best friends and actually...
Yes! And you're going to come on our podcast.
Yeah, we are. We're really excited to come on your podcast. Honestly, thank you so much. I think that
Thanks
has probably been my favourite
us.
Podcast we've ever done.
Oh!
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Oh my God, That was the absolute best. I love them so much.
They're so funny, weren't they? Like, we definitely need to go for a drink together or a cheeky Chinese, because I honestly could have chatted with them for like 6 hours. Absolutely bloody brilliant pair of them.
Same. And it just felt like hanging out with mates, and we hope that's how it sounded for all of our lovely listeners as well, because that's definitely how it felt. So we really hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we did. Oh my god, we loved it. We love you all so much, and we'll see you next Tuesday with a new episode. Bye.
Crowd Network, a place where you belong.